other things. So
Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales prior to stepping back to focus more on building Realty Universal membership network. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And now, Natalie Mullinex.
Hey, everybody. I'm so happy to be here another week and spend time with you all. Oh, boy, what a year. We've had such an exciting year so far, and wherever you are when you're listening to this, I think you're going to get a lot out of today's show. We aren't going to split it up in two, for those of you that are used to listening. We're going to just take it all the way through. And the season is right. The season is so right now for investing. We have, especially in the United States, we still have low rates. They've come up a little bit, but we still have really good low rates overall. And a lot of people, a lot of good investments. It's just all about education and learning what to do, which one to do. And today, I'm privileged. I'm really excited. I love when we can, on the show, tie in the entrepreneurship, investing, education, giving back, life, and our guest today does it all. And so I'm so excited to dig in and hear how he does it and the passion behind it. Neil Balwell, he has over 1,000 units in 7 states, investing in single-family and multifamily projects. He has extensive strategic and operational experience that he's brought to his businesses. In the past, he includes 17 years of revenue P&L experience as a senior-most executive in a California education company with over 300 employees and $40 million in revenue. It's amazing. And so now he's got what he's doing. His portfolio is valued at over $101 million. He speaks at multifamily events, IRA events, and meetups across the country. He has nearly 2,000 students that attend his multifamily seminar series each year, and hundreds attend his multifamily boot camps. He's the co-founder of the largest multifamily investing meetup in the U.S. called BAMF with 3,000 members. He leads the company and is driving the syndication acquisition of multifamily properties. I love how everything he does ties in, and he's doing all of the above, and he's the real deal. So who can teach better than the real deal? So without further ado, I'd like to welcome Neil. How are you?
Fantastic, Natalie. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm very excited to be here. Thank you.
I am so excited for you to be here, too, and I would love for you to us to continue with membership and what we do and what you're doing, because you're doing it all and very structured and organized. Tell us how you started way back. Maybe what got you into the passion of what you're doing?
Sure. Well, you know, I'm not real estate royalty. I've never held a broker's license. I basically didn't grow up in a family that had anything to do with real estate. I'm a technologist. Came here in 1997 as a network engineer and started working at an education company in the San Francisco Bay Area in Silicon Valley, and eventually worked my way up to be a partner in the business and started to grow that education business. And as we started to grow, we started to run out of space. So I started in real estate in reverse. I started with large commercial, then did a bunch of single families, and then went back to large multifamily. So my first real estate project was in 2003. We were exploding. The business was growing. It was an education, technology education business. I needed a whole bunch of classrooms. So we decided to buy a shell building. This is just an empty building, right? All we have got is ceilings and floors and nothing else, 27,000 square foot. And my boss said, here's a big check. Go build this into a full entitled campus. It has to open on the 4th of July, 2004. Because we had a huge number of students that were enrolled.
When was this?
Me.
You did it?
This is in Silicon Valley.
What month were you
2003.
In? 2003. What month?
So we were in early 2003, and I had to get it ready by the 4th of July, 2004. No permitting done, no planning done, just an empty building that he had already purchased. And so I was terrified, Matthew.
Zoning,
I was absolutely terrified because I said, I don't know anything about this. And he said, no, you're an operational guy. You will figure this stuff out. So eventually the idea that I came up with was, I'm going to go find somebody that's a mentor, like an older retired general contractor. And so every day when I get stuck, I'll tell him, you know, my problems and he'll help me resolve them. Also, my boss, who was fantastically smart guy, the senior partner, knew so much that it made the process so much easier. So we built that campus. We filled it in a record 2 years. So 2 years later, in 2006, I had the exact same problem. But this time I didn't have enough money, or he didn't have enough money, to buy the bigger building that was behind us. It was even larger and by now much more expensive because we had recovered from the 2001 crash. And so this time I learned something new. I learned how to take a commercial building, chop it up into little pieces, and sell individual pieces to investors, right? So it's called condo minimization, but in a way it was a syndication. It was my first informal syndication. And there were, if I remember correctly, nine doctors that were local. I had connections there. And so that was the first time that I did a project with a bunch of investors, with them buying their own suites. And then as my company grew, we rented all the suites back. So today, all of the suites in that building, except for one that one of the doctors kept, are actually rented back to my business. So it was a happy ending where
what
there's been one single tenant.
What a win-win situation for everybody.
Since the beginning. Yeah,
wow.
It was a fantastic win-win. And I think that's when I got addicted to real estate because I saw the benefits. I was one of the nine people.
You got
people,
the bug in you,
right?
Huh?
And he was like, this is really great. These people are not doing real estate, but they're making a lot of money in real estate, and it's all tax sheltered. Why don't I do more of this? So I said, what should I do in real estate? So like everybody else, I was like, well, I know I've done these large commercial projects, but these were two projects for my business. If I want to do them myself, let me start from the beginning. So I started in 2008, amazing timing, by the way, started buying single families, bought one, bought two, bought 10, ran out of loans, refinanced, bought my wife's name off.
Right.
Oh, yeah, fantastic deals, right? I was buying at 30 cents on the dollar in a single city called Madera, California. So it was a tertiary market that they had built a whole bunch of Kaufman and Broad homes for $260,000. I was buying them at $80,000. So it was just an amazing time to buy. Of course, everyone in my family thought that I was an idiot because they thought that they would fall further. And I'm doing the math saying it costs $180,000 to build this property. It's brand new. It's $80,000. It cash flows to 10% on day one. How in
You're
God's name could I be making
a mistake? Oh, my goodness. Wow,
right? So
you couldn't be.
I looked at that and I said, I'm going to buy as many as I can. I don't really care about what these people are saying because they're not doing the mathematics, and I am. Right? So I'm a math major. So I go in, I buy 10 of these properties. They all start doing really well. I run out of loans. I refinance. I get my wife's name off the loans. I go to Chicago and I start buying triplexes. And I buy 10 triplexes in her name and refinance the heck out of them as well, pulling so much money out that I actually didn't have a lot of equity left in these projects. I was just pulling equity out. And now I have money again. In the meantime, I'm selling the business, the education business, so I have a huge paycheck coming. And I'm thinking, what am I going to invest this money in, right? And I know that the business is going to get sold maybe in 2013. It's now 2011. And so I came up with this idea, which, you know, you've talked about, of the meetups. So I said, let me do two things. I'm going to go start putting investing syndication money with multifamily syndicators, passive investing, right? And I'm going to start asking them to allow me to sit in their weekly phone calls with property managers. And everyone told me that this was the most unusual request they'd ever had. They'd never had any passive investor that wanted to sit in property calls. And they were like, why do you want to sit in there? And I was just very honest. I said, I'm going to retire in about 2 or 3 years, and I want to own multifamilies for myself, and I need to learn. And since technically in the operating document, it says that if you're a passive investor, you may attend meetings, then I have the right to attend them, right? And they would look at the operating
right.
document and say, oh, yeah, it's going to be really boring. We use all kinds of acronyms. You're never going to understand a word of it. But, yes, theoretically, you have the right to sit in. And I started sitting in. My boss knew about it. I'm still working 10, 11 hours a day in my technology business. But he and I both know that he's going to retire, and I'm going to move on after we sell our business. So I keep doing that, and I start learning amazing stuff, Natalie. I start learning from these syndicators that have over $1 billion in their multifamily portfolio.
Wow.
And I'm learning the tricks of their business because I'm an investor with them, right? And they can't really stop me.
Brilliant.
So I go to more and more of these
Brilliant.
Meetings. I'm picking up on their documents, their metrics, their spreadsheets, their acronyms. And here's what I discovered, Natalie. A lot of these people were good at one thing or two things. They weren't good at everything else. They were just good at one or two things, and they were really, really good at those. Whether it was rehabbing multifamily properties, buying them cheap, selling them expensive, positioning them correctly, managing tenant quality, something they knew really, really well. But then I would compare everything else that they did with the others, and they were pretty bad at it. And then I realized that I could aggregate this knowledge from this billion-dollar portfolio and open something of my own once I finished. And this is still 2 years
right.
before my company sold. So I came to the realization that the stuff that I was
Brilliant.
Learning was very, very useful. But I would forget everything if I didn't do something about it. So then I went to my boss and I said, I'm going to open a meetup group inside our campus, inside our college in the evening. And you're welcome to show up too. But that's going to be my future path. I want to go, you know, down this future path. I want to open a meetup. I'm going to go invite a bunch of meetups. Do you have an objection? And he said, no. I want to show up in the evenings as well. So I would work from 8 to 6:30.
Wow.
And then I would walk 150
okay.
feet to a classroom and interact with hundreds of real estate people. It was so
wow.
mind-blowingly beneficial. I was learning from a fire hose, and they were all letting me teach whatever I was learning from the multifamily syndicators. Because I wasn't a risk to them. You know, they knew that I was, you know, a partner in the business that they were entering. It was a big college. Everybody knew us. And they were like, oh, yeah, this guy's not
Brilliant.
Competing with us. He doesn't have an axe to grind. And so everybody would let me teach. And I started teaching more and more concept. And then I became an expert in teaching data analytics for real estate. Because I found that a lot of real estate guys are not really mature in understanding and threshing through data. They're doing a little bit of it at surface
no.
level, but they're not really going through the full
right.
analysis. And most importantly, because they don't have education experience like I do, if they do it, it's horribly boring, right? They turn it into a bunch of Excel spreadsheets, and they're trying to go through it line by line and putting people to sleep. Well, my job in education was to make sure my students were awake. So we were constantly coming up with interaction and collaboration strategies to keep students awake. And so when I started to
Brilliant.
Teach the data stuff, in a nice way, people really liked it. And really, that's how my story developed. And there was a gradual transition that took many, many years where I sold that company, invested the money into multifamily, invested into my own multifamily.
So you sold not the educational company. You sold this other company, too. You're brilliant at building and then, wow, being
yep,
able
so
to.
So the education company was sold in 2013, and that was kind of my big
okay.
paycheck. And I briefly thought about retiring, but I think my mind is just too active. And the real estate stuff that
I understand.
Was doing was so much
right.
fun. And by that time, I'd already done my first syndication, which was a bunch of triplexes in Chicago that I did with three other investors. And then I just got the bug. This was great. Everyone was winning. And we were basically continuing to deliver, you know, money, cash-flowing apartments to people. And so I tied up with a partner. His name is Jean-Marc. He's a brilliant guy, had more real estate experience than I did. He was also a broker. And so I tied up with him, and we started to build, you know, our company. And today we're at a little over 1,000 units, though we've transacted about 2,000 units because we've bought and sold. And now the goal is to basically slowly continue developing that portfolio going forward into the future because we see a very bright very, very bright future for multifamily. You know, crashes will come, recessions will happen. I think that there's a recession
right.
coming within the next 2 years. But that doesn't
right.
change the overall picture. So that's my story
because,
in short.
Oh my God, I absolutely love it. Now, when you say with the recession coming or things happening, because the rents are one of the when you're buying and purchasing, you're looking at what the rental incomes can be, the cash flow, rate of return. Are you trying to keep it on a conservative side, or does it make there's just a lot of other factors that go into your decision when you're purchasing? I'm assuming.
I got to tell you, we've almost come to a halt in 2018 because in my area, which is large multifamily, valuations have gone up so much and the interest rates have hurt so much that folks like me either have to be bullish or they have to be out of the market. So I have been working on a number of strategies, which I can deliver to your group, that are strategies that enhance net operating income. Because doing what a typical syndication company does, which is, buy this property and rehab 80% of the units and raise rents by $150 a unit, and that doubles investor money. Well, honestly, in 2018, it doesn't work. It's not working. It worked until 2016, 17, but now those numbers are coming down. So there are more value adds that are necessary, and I'm using technology for those value adds. I'm using offshore teams to increase my lead pool. Tens of thousands of leads are being generated by my teams in India and the Philippines. And then I'm also processing those leads in the Philippines. So that way the people at the property have more time to sell. They're focused more on selling rather than chasing people and processing them. And that is increasing our overall net operating income at the properties. So it's a challenging market for us. We've certainly slowed down in buying properties because it's on the higher end in the 250-unit market. There's more competition than there is in the 50-unit market because there's more people like me that can write big checks. And so there's a ton of competition, and we're getting pushed down by the hedge funds, right? So you've got all these billion-dollar pension funds or trillion-dollar pension funds, and they're running around looking for yield, right? And they're beginning to buy what we are buying, Class B and Class C large multifamily. And so they're pushing us from above where the price increases and the interest rates are pushing us from below. So the market has become a little challenging compared to, what it is that you guys are doing. But there's a way out. I think using technology, we can accelerate our returns. And I've been teaching students how to use technology to accelerate multifamily returns. That's stuff that I've learned over the last two and a half years.
So when you're using technology, are you using, what are you, that's amazing. Are you actually going into, I'm just thinking different algorithms and different ways of using it to figure out what's going to go where or where you should push things over or mix your portfolios. I guess you blend the portfolios, right, depending on where it is?
Yes. Absolutely. Hmm. So let me give you a few nuggets of that, right? So number one.
Okay.
It's about where to buy, right? So the first use of technology is where should you be buying today? My first aha moment in 2015 when it came to analytics was there is no real estate market. Natalie, there are 2,300 discrete real estate markets in the United States. And unlike 2008, where every single one of those markets crashed to some extent, if you look at the last 100 years, they almost operate independent of each other. So we had markets where in Texas in the 80s, there was this huge crash, and the rest of the U.S. was doing just fine. Then in the 90s, Seattle had a massive crash because of Boeing leaving, and the rest of the U.S. was doing just fine. In normal markets, there are many different cycles, and you can use data, you can use analytics to identify if a market's in the second inning of the baseball game or if it's in overtime. There are markets that, in my mind, are way beyond the ninth inning, and I don't want to touch them, even though at this point there's no evidence that those markets are slowing down. But in my mind, it will happen. It won't happen, it might happen tomorrow. It might happen a year from today. But in my cycle, it's a five-year cycle. Multifamily is roughly a five-year cycle, so I wouldn't want to touch those markets. But then there are other markets that recovered very late from the recession. In fact, almost all of the truly awesome markets today are the ones that recovered late. Phoenix, for example, huge amount of overconstruction.
Vegas,
massive
amount
of excess inventory. And it took them until 2015 to really work their way through that inventory. And as a result, Phoenix really didn't do any new construction of single family from 2008 to 2015. 7 years of no new construction in a city that has 2.5% population growth. That's a big supply-demand problem that they created.
Right.
And now they're scrambling to fill it. Orlando is a city that has 3.5% job growth. That's sterling. That's phenomenal. But they didn't do any new construction from 2008 to 2014. So there's a lot of these cities that are late recovery cities that made huge mistakes before 2008. And as a result, they're actually the best cities to invest in today. So Las Vegas is another one, which is, you know, Sin City has been very focused on gambling. But gambling revenue declines every single year. Entertainment revenue goes up. So it's becoming an entertainment hub. And it's actually diversifying. They have a, you know, they have a football team now, one of the biggest in the U.S., investing $2 billion into them. It's becoming a really terrific place to invest.
We have a Real Universal quarters are there, and we have a it's very business friendly. Vegas, Nevada in itself is very business friendly. Wow,
absolutely.
So that's what amazing. So you're brilliant. Brilliant with what you're doing.
Well,
and
I'll give you a couple more nuggets if you want them. But the first nugget really is where to buy, and understanding that everyone that says that we are at the end of the real estate cycle should be saying that on average, we are at the end of the real estate cycle. But there are many markets in the United States that will continue to do well for the next 5 to 10 years because they're so early and they have such a big supply-demand gap. I tell everyone that's listening, you can find this out for yourself. You don't need any of my Excel graphs. Go to weareapartments.org. That's W-E-A-R-E, weareapartments.org. Every metro in the U.S. is represented. Scroll down to the graph that shows you the supply-demand imbalance, and you're going to see huge differences between cities. You're going to see that Phoenix has a massive supply-demand imbalance over the next 10 or 11 years, because it's very high growth, high birth rate, a high inward migration. Where you see a place like Pittsburgh, at no point over the next 13 years is the actual demand higher than supply in Pittsburgh. So I'm not going to be buying anything in Pittsburgh. I'm not saying that there's not lots of good markets in Pittsburgh.
Right.
That's not what I'm implying.
Right.
But when I look at the overall picture in that city, there is no doubt that supply is higher than demand. And I look at Phoenix. I look at Orlando. The charts are so simple that it should take you less than 30 seconds to tell the difference between a great city to invest in and a bad city to invest in. 30 seconds. Check it out. Weareapartments.org. And this is public data that is available. And yes, there's going to be a recession in there. And yes, there's going to be a dip. And yes, your rents are going to drop. My point, though, is if there is a major supply-demand imbalance underlying, the foundation problem is that there's a supply-demand imbalance. Then things will come back. So think of an upward moving line that just has a U in it. Those are the markets that I want. Because when it comes back, the right side of the U is longer, which means that it goes up. And it's all I see is a little dip in the middle. And the only thing I tell my students is, during that dip, make sure you're not stuck in a dangerous refinance. You know, if you have a bridge loan, you know, try not to have a bridge loan come up for renewal in the next 24 months. And if you do, then in that case, have a plan. Maybe if your property is doing well, you can add in a little more equity. So maybe if you're in the middle of a recession and you don't get 75% loan from bank, you get 65%, you have some equity that you put in to get you up to 75%.
Right.
Buy good properties and plan for the dip. It's going to be a dip. I can tell you, in my belief, recessions are coming, but the next recession will not be caused by real estate. You know, real estate's going to hurt, but I think it will be caused by something else because fundamentally we're in a better place than we were in 2008. It's expensive, but it's
right. What do you think is going to – well, okay, that's fantastic. That makes sense. Makes sense. Well, it makes total sense with everything going on in the economy. Well, what do you right now in your teaching, so you've actually taking and your trainings and you're doing, tell us a little bit about how that works if somebody wants to mm-hmm. join you and or take your courses, how they can get involved, and how that ties in with everything. Because I mean, you just have this down to a science. It's amazing.
Well, I try, right? So a technologist is trying to leverage, you know, his skills, which
yeah.
are data and process. I'm not really good with a lot of other things that real estate people are good with. So what I do is, apart from managing my portfolio, which takes the majority of my time, I teach a boot camp, and I developed this over the last 3 or 4 years. And I had some core concepts when developing this boot camp. Number one was that no student should ever say that I didn't give him 10 times the value of what I charged him. That was a key concept.
I can hear just with what you're telling us on the show. You're amazing. I bet. Yeah.
The value really has to be strong. Secondly, it has to be hands-on. I see a lot of people teaching really good stuff, concepts that are great. The problem is retention. People remember everything that they're teaching the day that it's being taught, but 60 or 90 days later, they forgot it, right? And then that's the way that the brain functions. So I wanted something that was lab-driven, that was hands-on. And so I don't teach much with PowerPoint at all. I teach using demos. And I teach using demos of live properties, live software. And the software gives my students that edge, that advantage. Their software that tells you the difference between the best neighborhoods in America and the worst neighborhoods in America, right? Let's take Phoenix as a good example of a powerful city. There's horrible neighborhoods in Phoenix. And in 2018, there's a lot more properties listed in the horrible neighborhoods than in the best ones. And when I tell people what best is, I'm not saying neighborhoods with, you know, $300,000 a year income. I'm talking about neighborhoods that are in the $60,000 or $70,000 income. Those are best for multifamily because they're good neighborhoods. Unemployment is low. The you know, level of poverty is low. But there's still neighborhoods where the math works so you can have cash flowing properties. So I don't want to tell people or give them a list of such markets. I want them to be able to calculate those markets themselves. So we have a two-hour lab in the boot camp where the end of that, they're doing that calculation. They're coming up with a list of cities. They're ranking them on, you know, the typical numbers, which I find on the web for them, and they have links to those. So very lab-driven, because at the end, I don't want them to go away with a list. That list is not going to be any good a year or 2 years from now. But if I teach them how to calculate the difference between good cities, good neighborhoods, bad neighborhoods, then they've learned it for life. And because they're doing it, they'll remember how to do it in the future. So very, very lab-driven.
I love it.
The boot camp. And then the third piece is I wanted to do the exact reverse of what you would typically find with real estate gurus. You know, I've been to an event by one of the gurus who remain unnamed where I handed out a business card to the person sitting next to me and got thrown out of the room because they said, we don't allow networking. That's terrible. I do the reverse. I want my students to network, and I have structured labs for networking because I find that if you're in a group of three or four, you're much more likely to take down your first multifamily. Multifamily is like an elephant. It's easier to hunt an elephant in a group of four than by yourself, even if you have an elephant gun.
True.
So I'm looking to pair my students together, and to do that, every student is required to rank their skill sets in five key areas that are very important for multifamily, and they rank them in real time with other students watching. And then I have the students pick 5 to 10 other people in the same boot camp that have the opposite skill set, right? If you're really good at underwriting, you don't want to pick somebody else who's also very good at underwriting because he's going to do that. You want to pick somebody who can jump on a plane 2 hours from now when the property is found. You want to pick somebody that can raise equity. Or you might want to pick somebody that's really, really good with operations and can basically for 5 years get on the phone call with the property managers. Those are skill sets that are key. So I'm looking to pair students up with diverse skill sets. And that ecosystem of the students is also benefiting me because I'm finding partners, I'm finding properties, I'm finding investors, I'm finding key sponsors. I'm finding really every part of the ecosystem through this student network, which allows me to price it at under $1,000 instead of, you know, the typical $20,000 to $40,000. So many of my students get a fantastic deal, but some of the others are helping me make them. So that was the goal. I have a way that we can give back and not charge the typical price. So I'm charging less than 5% of what others are charging.
It's amazing. It's amazing. So how do they get in touch with you? How do they get in touch with you, Neil? So we're going to put that out there.
The best way is multifamilyu.com. The U stands for university. So multifamilyu.com has 7 great webinars on multifamily. I would suggest that you start with something called Multifamily Fundamentals. 60 minutes, very high-speed walkthrough of how multifamily is different from single family. Not better, not worse, but different.
Different.
And for those that are interested, all of the differences will be known to you at the end of that 60 minutes. Then there's a webinar called Real Estate Trends, which shows you the methodology that I talked about. It's going to walk you through every state in America, and we're going to pick 80 cities, and you're going to learn why those cities are being picked. Why are those cities being picked? And the basic reasons why those cities are going to grow faster, either on the rent appreciation side or the price appreciation side over the next few years. And I share the sources with you. None of the sources come from Neil Bawa. They all come from Realtor.com or Trulia or Apartment List. But I am, through my paid services like CoStar, validating those and saying, yep, it looks like this is on point. So if something's not on point,
right.
CoStar is a very expensive, you know, subscription for multifamily guys like me. If they don't like a particular market, I remove it from the list because maybe they're seeing something that some of these public websites are not seeing. So I'm looking for patterns in the data. And then I'm, instead of, you know, not just doing cities, I'm also doing states. So there's states that I think are going to do really, really well in the next 5 years, and I list those states out in that Real Estate Trends webinar. And then at the end, I pick one city in California and one city nationwide that I think is the dark horse for 2019. So we'll see if I get, you know, if I have egg in my face a year from now. So
right.
That's the process. But multifamilyu.com will give you all of this content, and of course the boot camp is listed there. You'll see what I teach in the boot camp. You'll also hear from dozens and dozens of students on the website, including lots and lots of videos from them.
Okay, so it's about 12 hours, and they can sign up at any time, right? There aren't scheduled dates. It's just where you can kind of go at your own pace and with the group, or how does that work?
No, it is scheduled. I found that when I record it as a video, a lot of people don't finish. The completion rate was low. But when people come in
on a structured
schedule, it's very high. I get a 95, 96% completion rate, and I want that high completion rate. So what I do, actually, to make it easier for people is, if a bootcamp's not coming up for more than 30 days, I give them the recordings of the previous bootcamp. I ask them to go through those. I give them access to that set of students, that ecosystem, and ask them to get started. So July is an in-between month, and we have lots and lots of students that are actually taking the bootcamp right now. They take the recordings, and then in September, they take it live. Now they can ask questions and be part of a second ecosystem of students.
Right.
So you end up with two ecosystem of students. But the live component is very, very important to me because, you know, there's East Coast cities and there's West Coast cities where I have lots and lots of students. So D.C., Virginia area, I have lots of students. So I'm constantly through Facebook telling them, when are you guys meeting in person? The Bay Area groups, the San Francisco Bay Area group, meets in person almost immediately after the boot camp, and then they keep meeting. I don't want them to just do things inside of our ecosystem. I want them to go out and start building their own ecosystems, find their own investors, and hopefully share some of those with them. And that's what I'm getting out of it, where they're building these mini ecosystems of their own, and I'm benefiting through that because I'm at the center.
I love it. It's just you have it all put together. So then when they come in, they can actually get funding through investors you show them, or you all invest with them at times, you know what it is?
So all of those. So the short answer is the ecosystem has investors. It has key sponsors who sign on loans. It has brokers. It has people that are primarily focused on finding properties. And it has people that are primarily focused on underwriting them and managing them once they're purchased. All of those components are inside the ecosystem.
Well,
and they're not paying me a fee for that. I'm benefiting,
fantastic.
You know, through the students, but everyone's got access to that ecosystem for free. They can post their project and get money on it in our secure Facebook site without talking to me.
What do you think about hard money? If somebody goes out and they just go ahead and say, "Hey, I'm gonna, you know, I don't want to put all my own money in. I think I can, you know, refinance. It's kind of risky because if they can't refinance out, then they're stuck, right, with them. But what's your opinion on that, hard money?
In my mind, it depends on the type of property. So if you're going to go to Memphis or you're going to go to St. Louis and you're going to buy a property that is 100% empty and use hard money for that, that is, in my mind, a crazy risk. If you go to Fort Worth and buy a property at 90% that you think you can rehab and improve, get it from 90 to 95, raise the rents $150, maybe that's not such a bad use of hard money, right? There's a big difference in quality between Fort Worth and, you know, Memphis, especially C areas in Memphis. And I'm not bashing Memphis because, to be honest, there's lots of great places
to invest
in Memphis.
Right.
But the point there is, look at your risk level when taking hard money. An empty multifamily in 2018 with unemployment at 3.9% is empty for a reason. You just don't know that reason
right.
yet. And you should not be investing
exactly.
hard money at 8% or 10% without knowing that reason.
That makes sense. Another question. What about, you know, we have lead paint issues all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
And any
mm-hmm.
property built prior to 1978, and we have some other issues
yep.
too, that is to have lead paint, and then it can be very expensive to remove it and the regulations.
Mm-hmm.
Do you
mm-hmm.
usually suggest that they buy properties that are younger than that, or does it matter?
It's going to be too limiting to do that. To be honest, obviously, if you have a choice, buy a property beyond 1978. But no, a lot of my students
okay.
are looking for properties in the early 70s and even the late 60s. My message to them, which is recorded as a video, because you're asking me a question that has legal consequences, so I recorded it as a video. The short version of it is this. Lead paint is not the end of the world. Look at your rehab. What are you doing with the
right.
property? Are you moving walls? Are you doing cosmetic rehab? Are you simply taking out the carpet and putting laminate in? And when you're doing that plan, if you know that the building is older than 1978, bring in an asbestos remediation company, right, or lead paint remediation company, because you have asbestos and lead paint as somewhat
to see what the price is,
issues.
Right.
Right. And basically see what would happen if you were forced to bring them in. Would it kill your project, or would it just hurt it a little bit? Because in many, 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 many instances, you're not going to end up using that company. But what if you do? Can you survive? That's the big question. You shouldn't
you can add
buy
it into
one of
your
buildings
figures.
Without knowing it. Exactly. And at that point in time, when you add it in, it will hurt your overall performance. It will hurt your results. But because lead paint issues and asbestos issues are not very common, they happen, right? But they happen in some small percentage of cases. You may say, okay, I want to take this risk, but at least I know what my risk is. And I know I can survive.
Exactly.
It. That's my feedback.
I love it. It's this is really exciting because you're covering everything all the way around. And do you think okay, multifamily and single family, the portfolio when you get into that,
mm-hmm.
again you
mm-hmm.
have formulas and what you're looking at. What would you say? So would you go lean more towards commercial or totally residential, or does it matter? Well, multifamily, of course, is going to be more residential and single family. But do you get into situations
right.
where it could be apartment complex at large?
So to me, I think multifamily or large apartment complexes are in a class of their own. What I call commercial is office, hotel, storage, self-storage, or industrial.
Right.
In my mind,
right. Shopping
I
centers.
Will give you the only honest answer I can about commercial properties. They're all in different cycles. I think that retail, especially mall retail, is going to hurt for decades. Only 3-4%
right.
of all transactions in the U.S. are e-commerce. Now that 80% of American households have Amazon Prime, I see that number 4% continuing to increase at a very radical rate, so at an exponential rate. So I think that retail, especially expensive
makes
retail,
sense.
Is going to suffer for decades. On the other hand, I think that warehouses are going to see a boom that might last decades for the exact same reason, because now that product is not in the malls. That product is sitting in a warehouse somewhere and is going to be shipped to people. I don't think that we ever built warehouses knowing that all the mall space would be converted into warehouses. You can't really convert
uh-huh.
malls into warehouses anyway. So now you have a situation where sooner or later you have too few warehouses and too many customers. So I think warehousing and industrial in general is going to have a very good run for the next 10 or 15 years. Yes, there's going to be bubbles in those markets as well. But when you look at it overall, I think it's a much better market. With hotels, it really depends on how far Airbnb's penetration goes. And no one is really sure about that, right? So we don't quite know whether Airbnb is going to become 10, 20% of the market, which is bad, or 2 or 3% of the market, in which case I don't think it really affects, you know, the hotel industry overall. So it's an open question that I don't think anybody truly knows the answer to. So in my mind, I look at those areas and I say, I'm good with multifamily. I understand the concepts, and I've made a lot of mistakes that I've learned from. And that I haven't done with any of the other markets. So I don't go into them because they're good or bad markets. I don't go into them because I haven't made enough mistakes in those areas. And so I think that taking other people's money for them is a little bit of an ethical challenge.
I love that answer. That makes sense. Makes complete sense.
But a good area. Industrial is probably better than multifamily at this point in time, just in the overall, you know, kind of where it is in the cycle.
It's there's so much involved. What do you think about when people go in and there's a lot of, I know with some of the, I won't expect you to answer anything that's a legal question. You know, I know we have to always disclaim that we're not giving legal advice. But right now with the economy going where it is and a lot of changes happening in government, a lot of changes that I think are going to even themselves out after some of the negotiations happen and other, you know, we've got a lot of issues going on. What do you think about, like, right now there's a lot of money out for government housing projects and there's a lot of markets where owners can go in and rent their property out through housing programs, whether it's Section 8, whether it's BenBQ. There's just many, many different ones that are the government-assisted housing programs where the renter gets money based on income to, you know, gets money, it's subsidized. What do you think about that generally? I'm not going to, you know, I don't want to narrow it down too much on your opinion on it because, of course, it's hard to have an opinion on some of these things that come up.
Sure.
What do you think about it generally? Because there's a lot of money out there now which could easily tighten up in the next 2 to 5 years based on the way things are going in government, but it's hard to say.
Well, I can tell you I have very strong beliefs about this, so I don't mind sharing them. And again, this is a personal belief. It's not necessarily my company's belief, but my personal belief. What I have seen is in markets – Thank you. In markets that are already seeing the problems that you've talked about, I am seeing that money get cut. So Chicago is a perfect example of a market where unfunded pension liabilities are through the roof, right? So their entire state is threatened with their unfunded pension liabilities, and they are cutting the CHA program. They're tweaking it. They're making it harder for landlords to get in. They're not increasing money every year. They're actually decreasing it. I believe that the same sort of thing happens with other states that are deeply indebted. New Jersey is such a state. Illinois certainly is a state like that. There's a few other states that are very indebted, very heavily in debt. And more of the money that comes from taxpayers is going into paying for the interest on their loans. And what I'm seeing is that the Section 8 housing programs tend to be early on the chopping block. They're not chopping them. They're trimming them. So they're reducing the percentage of, you know, folks like us that are considering those programs as part of our portfolio. We're saying, ooh, well, we don't want to touch Section 8 if the amount decreases every year. I'm supposed to increase rents by 3 or 4%. So a lot of people that considered Section 8 to be viable, especially in the Midwest, are now very wary. In my mind, if they're not wary, they really should be.
Right. I agree. I've seen a lot of programs cut and trimmed, like you said. They're not taking new people, but they still keep the old one open.
I'm bullish on real estate, though, because a lot of 2018 stuff that's going on, you know, finding properties difficult, prices are high, will adjust. There's an adjustment period happening in real estate. There's new technologies coming out. You know, for those of you that like new technology and how it affects real estate, check out something known as CLT or mass timber. It is something that's
mass
very
timber,
prevalent
mass
in
timber.
Europe. Mass timber, M-A-S-S, timber. It is a way to build a house in a factory using pure wood. There is no drywall in the house. The wood is exposed and looks exquisite. But the cost of construction in bulk, when you're building 100 or 200 of these, is actually lower. And you build the property 4 to 6 months faster. Mass timber is a revolution in the U.S. that just hit us in the last 2 or 3 years, especially in Seattle and Portland, where there's a lot of people building mass timber. But it'll get rolled out across the U.S. Why? Our labor costs are going up much faster than inflation. They're going up more than double the inflation rate. Construction costs are going up. Steel is expensive. Concrete is expensive. Timber, though, is
right.
a renewable asset, right? You can renew timber. And the beauty
right.
of it is no drywall installation, right? You are directly exposing
right.
extremely beautiful wood, and you're not installing it. 60 to 70% of the installation is done at the factory, and then a piece that sits on a truck, Lego-blocked, is brought to the site and bolted in. That kind of modular construction is we're going to see more and more of. And I don't think it'll solve our affordability problem, but it'll make a big dent in it in the next 10 to 15 years.
That's fair. What was the other one you said? C something?
CLT. Same concept, just two different names. CLT or mass timber, I think, is the solution.
Okay.
Because in the long run,
okay.
If you keep having steel and concrete go up 3% a year, in the end, you know, we're going to be priced out. We're seeing that, right? We're seeing the middle class get priced
right,
out of
homes. We are.
Whether they're single family or multifamily. So technology will provide the solution to that because a big portion of the cost here in the U.S. is labor. If we could assemble this stuff in a factory and plump it there, that is the Amazon effect for real estate, right? Because Amazon is just bringing efficiency to all phases of the e-commerce selling process. And I think that mass timber can have the same impact over the next 10 to 15 years for real estate. And the beauty of mass timber, if you go to Google, click on images, type in mass timber, the eye candy is amazing. The wellness feeling when you're
really?
Walking through a house that made in of wood, solid wood, not the kind of drywall where you thump it and the whole house shakes, but real wood.
Wow.
It's amazing. So
it
I'm
probably breathes better. I mean, everything
on,
is very natural.
Yeah.
They have the 3D, you know, they have the tiny homes, the 3D homes,
yeah.
right? They're coming up with so
yeah.
many different. The 3D homes I find very interesting to begin. I never thought you could.
Yep.
Can you imagine making a house out of a printer, from a printer? You know, it
yep.
just, it's
yep.
amazing. I mean, when you think about what technology has done.
If these solutions are in the pipeline,
doing.
The amount of money that's going into commercial real estate technology is staggering. And where's it going in from? I mean, if you think about it, Natalie, it's going from the incumbents, the Marcus and Millichaps, the Colliers, the people that have $10 billion businesses that are afraid that they're about to get
right.
run over are the
that
ones that
sense.
Are setting up $100 million funds for commercial real estate and saying, well, whatever the new thing is, we want a piece of that. And so we're seeing a huge amount of action, and I think that that will result in us finding ways to, you know, do more efficient building over the next 10 years. It'll take time, but the pain is so
right.
so much right now that the solutions will be fine.
I agree. That's where the solutions come from, you know. It always does.
Yep.
It's always.
Yep.
But this has been so enlightening. You, I mean, it's really. Interested in getting signing up for one of your courses too. I think this is, and you said it's about 12 hours, and but between teaching and learning, I guess they probably get into it a few months, especially if they listen to the first course first,
mm-hmm.
the replays.
That's right.
And,
so I'm teaching live for 12 hours. Out of that, I'm answering questions for about 3 hours, three and a half hours, and then there's interaction, there's labs that you have to do in between sessions. So it's in the evenings, designed for professionals. Most of the students that I have are folks that are doing something else, that are looking to get into real estate, or they have full-time real estate jobs already, and they're looking to learn multifamily. So it's in the evening, three times a week. You're committing 6 hours in the evening, two successive weeks. And then I give you the action plan, which is very step-by-step. It's not 15 bullets. It is sections with amount of time and specific steps that you have to take and the order in which you take those steps. So that probably is going to be about 4 hours a week for about 3 months. And I think if you do all of these steps, there's a very good chance that you'll be in contract on a multifamily at the end of that 90th day.
Really? Really? Wow.
So we,
that's fantastic.
There's benefits to every situation, right? Yes, it's hard to find properties, but it's never been easier to find investors. I don't believe that there's been any time in our history that was, you know, easier to find investors than it is today. You know, we have stock markets at all-time highs, real estate at all-time highs, 1031. We have trillions of dollars of 1031. This is a joke, obviously, but if I throw a rock here in Silicon Valley, I'm going to hit an accredited investor. You know, it's just amazing the amount of equity that's available in the marketplace. And that's an advantage that my students have that I didn't have in 2008. In 2008, everyone thought that I was insane.
It was fantastic to get it on 30 cents on the dollar.
That's right.
So you're not only you're teaching them how to do it, you're also teaching them how to find the investors too, as well as investing with them too, depending on the situation, the deal. Love it.
Investor interaction is very key, right? And I tell people, look, I'm not even born in the U.S. You know, this is not my first language. What I'm talking about makes sense to people because it's data-driven. If you put a presentation together, supported with numbers, supported with data, and people will listen because everybody wants to place their money somewhere. And they want to have good people taking care of their money.
Well, with the investors coming in, are you finding people doing, you know how they have those different GoFundMe, different platforms? There's so many platforms right now to get funding. Are you just pretty much open to all of it, or depends on what?
I haven't used any of the crowdfunding platforms in my projects, to be honest. With 4,000 people attending my webinars, the number of investors in my project exceeds my ability to find them. I was considering them about 3 years ago, but then I went the route of creating an educational platform. I appear on about 20 podcasts a year. You know, I teach at about 15 or 20 meetups and conferences. And plus multifamily U, there's at least 10 people signing up for webinars daily. So I haven't needed that.
You already have so many. That makes
sense. The crowdfunding concept. Always looking for more investors, but to be honest, the hot button right now are good properties.
Makes complete sense. Makes total sense. Tell us a little bit. We're almost coming to the end of the show, believe it or not. It goes by fast.
Wow.
Tell us a little bit, because I know people can use their Roth IRAs, their regular IRAs, to buy property, and many people are not aware of that. Is that something that's covered a little bit, too, just to kind of show them that there's other ways to pull that money out of
Absolutely. Yeah. About 20% of my investors, so about 50, 60 investors that I have actively investing in my projects, are using some form of IRA, so self-directed IRA, solo 401k. In some cases, they can use standard 401ks, but I've noticed that only large companies are allowing that. But smaller companies are making you kind of, once you leave a job, you can roll that money over into a self-directed IRA or a solo 401k. They both have pros and cons that you should talk to a CPA about. But I'm finding that's a very good way to invest. It's not money out of your pocket. What I find is when people are investing money that's burning a hole in their pocket, they tend to gravitate towards the highest cash flow, which, as you know really well, is not always the best property. But when they're investing for retirement, they're thinking, well, I want to make sure this is a good investment. I don't need the money over the next 5 or 10 years. I want to invest in a good property. I'm finding my IRA investors actually making better decisions because it's not a question of this one has 8% cash flow and that one has 7. If they're making holistic decisions, and in my mind, they're making better.
So, you are an amazing teacher.
It's a huge market, though. There's trillions of dollars in retirement funds available in the United States. It's a never-ending source of money for those of you out there that are looking to buy multifamily. It's gigantic. I taught at one of the IRA companies 3 years ago. I think it was called IRA Services. I'm still getting phone calls 3 years later.
I bet. People always need to sell too, and then there's the portfolios. I guess you've over 100 million is pretty large. 1,000 units in 7 states, huh?
Yes. My biggest challenge, of course, is to maintain stuff in different states, right? So there are so many efficiencies that you get in having 1,000 units in, let's say, Houston or Dallas. When people like me who are data-driven jump state to state as the state's, you know, GDP changes, its population growth changes, there's a downside to that. And that downside is that we have to rebuild our networks. We rebuild our teams. And so it is a very I sometimes say that my solution is data-driven but not the most scalable, because I jump cities every year. And in doing so, I'm not fully leveraging the network that I just built in the last one. So pros and cons.
Right, so you have to redo it. Although your systems are good in place, you can duplicatable, but you have to redo it again, huh? Yeah.
Exactly. The people, right? So the systems are there. Your back-end people are there. But your front-end people, which are in that city, you have to build that again.
Wow. I love it. We have to do more of these because it's amazing what you have everything in place. It's just not – and your cost is unbelievable, which it make I just – my hat's off to you the way you're
Thank
doing
you.
This and structuring it. The now, can anybody go in also and join on the BAMF investing meetup group? Or?
Yes, you can, though you'll only be able to attend the webinar. So BAMF, 50% of our content are webinars and 50% are face-to-face meetings. So if the face-to-face meetings are only in the San Francisco Bay Area, but the webinars, which are dozens of them in a year, are all available to you to join. Yes, anyone can join a meetup group anywhere in the U.S. And I actually have, even though it says Bay Area Multifamily Meetup, I have students from just people from all over the U.S. that have joined in, probably from listening to my podcasts or radio interviews.
Absolutely. That's fantastic.
And by the way, I would love to come back and talk to your group. I think we kind of touched on a few topics that I'd love to talk more about, especially processes and systems, creating efficiency, creating scale. I do that through virtual assistants. I have a large number of them in the Philippines and in India. And what I find is that the vast majority of people know that you can get virtual assistants to do work. They just don't know how to manage them, and I think that's the disconnect. A lot of them think that the virtual assistants are low quality. Actually, that's not the case. You're actually getting very qualified people that are technology savvy on the other side, because they've worked for 20 or 30 clients over, you know, their 5 years of experience. So the talent is there, but the systems, the processes, there's a number of basic mistakes that people make that I'd love to, you know, tell them, tweak it this way, tweak it that way, and you're going
to
see huge returns.
Yeah, we've been working with the Philippines since 2002, but it's more on administrative issues. You know, there's different, and some in India too. But I love that you've just, there's no reason to reinvent the wheel, and you've got it down pat. It just sounds like you can tell with your heart too. We're all about being heart centered and serving and making sure we're making a difference, and you are. You've really tied it all in to make it a win-win for everybody.
It truly can be. People ask me, how do you do this with $1,000 boot camp? And the answer is every 20th or 15th student is helping me buy a property, helping me find investors, helping me sign for loans on a property that I couldn't buy myself. And if you look at it holistically, I might end up making more money than I would by charging people $40,000, because I'll get a lot less students. You know, how many people can afford the $40,000 fee?
I think it's wonderful. And it's very, very consistent, very, comfortable too. And the level of entry is there's not a barrier to entry. And I really love how you're interacting and teaching so that people do learn, because we do learn by doing, right, rather than just going to a convention or seminar. You buy all the products, buy things, and then it's a fact. I mean, we've all been there, and then people aren't using our products right after a little bit of time if they're not working through it. So this is, we have a lot of agents and brokers to talk to you about, too, because the network, blend out in their own communities, and just one person helps another person, and it just is beautiful. We are at the end of the show, just about. I wanted to see if you wanted. I'd love to have you back. I wanted to work with you on networking too, because you're just. I'm so privileged to meet you, and
likewise.
I want to hear more. So,
my message is: keep coming to multifamilyu.com. Check out the webinars. I think that you'll, some of them are very eye-opening, especially for those older ones that want to know more about how the financial system is tied to real estate. There's a webinar that talks about how the banking system changed real estate forever. So check that one out as well. And
okay.
My phone number is on my website. You want to talk to me? Give me a call. I'd love to chat with you.
This is Neil Bawaw talking. Hey, this is amazing. Thank you so much. To everybody out there, I wish you peace.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us on Realty Universal Radio. Our hope is that you are enlightened, encouraged, and mobilized to be an agent of change. Realty Universal is on Facebook. Join us there. Follow us also on Twitter at Realty Universal. And for more information, you can go to RealtyUniversal.com. Make it a great day.